This is the first section in chapter 13 of That Hideous Strength. "Stand. Stand where you are and tell me your name and business," said Ransom. The ragged figure on the threshold tilted its head a little sideways, like one who cannot quite hear. At the same moment, the wind from the open door had its way with the house. The inner door, between the scullery and the kitchen, clapped to with a loud bang, isolating the three men from the women, and a large tin basin fell clattering into the sink. The stranger took a pace further into the room. "Star," said Ransom in a loud voice. "In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, dic mihi qui sis, et quam ob causam veneris." The stranger raised his hand and flung back the dripping hair from his forehead. The light fell full on his face, from which Ransom had the impression of an immense quietness. Every muscle of this man's body seemed as relaxed as if he were asleep, and he stood absolutely still. Each drop of rain from the khaki coat struck the tiled floor exactly where the drop before it had fallen. His eyes rested on Ransom for a second or two with no particular interest. Then he turned his head to his left to where the door was flung back against the wall. McPhee was concealed behind it. "Come out," said the stranger in Latin. The words were spoken softly, but so deep that even in that wind-shaken room they made a kind of vibration. But what surprised Ransom much more was the fact that McPhee immediately obeyed. He didn't look at Ransom, but at the stranger. Then, unexpectedly, he gave an enormous yawn. The stranger looked him up and down, and then turned to the director. "Fellow," he said in Latin, "tell the lord of this house that I am come." As he spoke, the wind from behind him was whipping the coat about his legs and blowing his hair over his forehead, but his great mass stood as if it had been planted like a tree, and he seemed in no hurry. And the voice, too, was such as one might imagine to be the voice of a tree, large and slow and patient, drawn up through roots and clay and gravel from the depths of the earth. "I am the master here," said Ransom in the same language. "To be sure," answered the stranger, "and yonder whippersnapper is without doubt your bishop." He didn't exactly smile, but a look of disquieting amusement came into his keen eyes. Suddenly he poked his head forward, so as to bring his face much nearer to the director's. "Tell your master that I am come," he repeated. Ransom looked at him without the flicker of an eyelid. "Do you really wish," he said at last, "that I call upon my masters?" "A door that lives in a hermit's cell has learned before now to chatter book Latin," said the other. "Let us hear your calling, mannikin." "I must use another language for it," said Ransom. "A door could have Greek also in its bill." "It is not Greek. Let us hear your Hebrew, then." "Not Hebrew." "No," said the other with something like a chuckle deep hidden in his enormous chest and betrayed only by a slight movement of his shoulders. "If you come to the gabble of barbarians, it'll go hard, but I'll out-chatter you. Here's excellent sport." "It may happen to seem to you the speech of barbarians," said Ransom, "for it's long since it's been heard. Not even in Numenor was it heard in the streets." The stranger gave no start, and his face remained as quiet as before, if it didn't become quieter. But he spoke with a new interest. "Your masters let you play with dangerous toys," he said. "Tell me, slave, what is Numenor?" "The true West," said Ransom. "Well," said the other. Then, after a pause, he added, "You have little courtesy to guests in this house. It's a cold wind on my back, and I've been long in bed. You see, I have already crossed the threshold." "I value that at a straw," said Ransom. "Shut the door, McPhee," he added in English. But there was no response. And looking round for the first time, he saw that McPhee had sat down in the one chair which the scullery contained and was fast asleep. "What's the meaning of this foolery?" said Ransom, looking sharply at the stranger. "If you are indeed the master of this house, you've no need to be told. If not, why should I give account of myself to such as you? Don't fear, your horse boy will be none the worse. This shall be seen to shortly, said Ransom. In the meantime, I don't fear your entering the house. I have more cause to fear your escaping. Shut the door, if you will, for you see my foot is hurt. The stranger, without ever taking his eyes off Ransom, swept back his left hand behind him, found the door handle, and slammed the door to. McPhee never stirred. Now, he said, what of these masters of yours?
My masters are the Oyarasu.
Where did you hear that name? Asked the stranger. Or if you are truly of the college, why do they dress you like a slave?
Your own garments, said Ransom, are not those of a druid.
That stroke was well put by, answered the other. Since you have knowledge, answer me three questions, if you dare.
I will answer them if I can, but as for daring, we shall see.
The stranger mused for a few seconds, then, speaking in a slightly sing-song voice, as though he repeated an old lesson, he asked in two Latin hexameters the following question. Who is called Sulva? What road does she walk? Why is the womb barren on one side? Where are the cold marriages? Ransom replied, Sulva is she whom mortals call the moon. She walks in the lowest sphere. The rim of the world that was wasted goes through her. Half of her orb is turned towards us and shares our curse. The other half looks to deep heaven. Happy would he be who could cross that frontier and see the fields on her further side. On this side the womb is barren and the marriage is cold. There dwell an accursed people full of pride and lust. There, when a young man takes a maiden in marriage, they don't lie together, but each lies with a cunningly fashioned image of the other, made to move and to be warm by devilish arts. For real flesh won't please them, they are so dainty in their dreams of lust. The real children they fabricate by vile arts in a secret place.
You've answered well, said the stranger. I thought there were but three men in the world that knew this question. But my second may be harder. Where is the ring of Arthur the King? What lord has such a treasure in his house?
The ring of the king, said Ransom, is on Arthur's finger, when he sits in the House of Kings in the cut-shaped land of Habhalion, beyond the seas of Lure in Perelandra. For Arthur did not die, but our Lord took him to be in the body till the end of time and the shattering of Salva, with Enoch and Elias and Moses and Melchizedek the king. Melchizedek is he in whose hall the steep stone ring sparkles on the forefinger of the Pendragon.
Well answered, said the stranger. In my college it was thought that only two men in the world knew this. But as for my third question, no man knew the answer but myself. Who will be Pendragon in the time when Saturn descends from his sphere? In what world did he learn war?
In the sphere of Venus I learned war, said Ransom. In this age Lurga shall descend. I am the Pendragon. When he had said this, he took a step backwards, for the big man had begun to move, and there was a new look in his eyes. Any who had seen them as they stood thus face to face would have thought that it might come to fighting at any moment. But the stranger hadn't moved with hostile purpose. Slowly, ponderously, yet not awkwardly, as though a mountain sank like a wave, he sank on one knee, and still his face was almost on a level with the director's.